Hey, Sarah.
We're back on our podcast. Yes. Another week. Another
podcast.
There we go. Anyway.
Another episode.
We have a super cool guest. Her name's Irene. And she's going to tell us a little bit about herself. Go.
Great. Yeah, so I'm Irene. I'm from Arizona. I'm from Flagstaff. Live in Tucson. Yep.
Cool. What do you do here?
So I am a therapist. I mostly work with kids, but I also work with adults. And technically I'm a licensed master's social worker.
Cool.
Oh wow.
Yes.
Nice.
That's me.
In undergrad, were you doing, like, what did you study in undergrad?
So in undergrad, I did psych. I came from Flag down to the U of A to study psych.
Cool.
And then I always knew that I wanted to do, like, mental health therapy, but when you're in psych, it's hard to really know how to do that. And so you're like, do I get my PhD and become a psychologist? Do I become a psychiatrist, research? And for lots of reasons, I decided to become a social worker, partially because it's less school. I was 2 years in my master's program. And I did research and I liked it, but I wanted to do more hands-on stuff. And so then I moved to Austin, Texas, and I got my master's there in clinical social work. Hook 'em horns. And it was a 2-year program, really hard, but it was really fun living in Austin. And I felt like I learned, also got my education, like, living in the Austin community, and, like, things are so happening there, like,
cool.
Being in the capital, social justice, all of that. And then I moved back because I was in a long-distance relationship and because I love Tucson and for my friends. And then I moved back, and, like, when I was still living in Austin, I moved back and I got a job. So I got my job when I was still living there.
Cool.
Moved back, started within a couple weeks. And so now I work at an agency in town, and I'm a therapist there, behavioral health therapist.
Cool.
And mostly provide therapy to primarily foster kids, children involved in foster care, and low-income people. So the only way we see them is if they're on access. So that, they just are in low enough income that they qualify for free health insurance, and then we see them.
Cool. There's such a need for that. I used to work at, or intern at, the IRC, the National Rescue Mate. Do you have, or I don't know if you can tell me that, but anyway, we were always looking for therapists that would, like, see people on access and, like, low income people. So that's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And I think just people who are on access, knowing that that's something that is available to them, free therapy, and they don't have to, no money is exchanged, and we always need more people providing therapy. A common thing that people say in our field is, like, really high caseloads and burnout, low pay. Which is all true. but I think if there was more people, like, interested in it, going after it, maybe there'd be bigger changes on the state or federal level to have more money put towards our field.
Yeah.
So,
and less caseload per person.
Yeah. The more people, less
How long have you been working there?
Since August, so not super long. But leaving grad school, I got a lot of experience in grad school because social work, a lot of our education is internship. So you're pretty much full-time student, full-time intern.
Dang.
And, but I still wanted more experience. So now I just feel like I got punched in the face with experience. And, like, lots of experience now. But, so it's cool to think about when I'm there longer or in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I've already learned so much, and even in grad school, I felt like when I was in psych, I felt like I got an understanding of mental health and psychology, but then when I went to grad school, I was like, wow, I know nothing.
Yeah.
And then got to learn a little bit more and specify and learn actually, like, what to do, like, right. how to do it. And so that was, like, really special got when I got my job, because I was like, wow, I actually know how to do this thing that I've always wanted to do. That's and cool. Now, even being there, I am, like, feel more confident every day. So... Not 100% confident, because I think that comes with being a young professional. We're all, like, making it up as we go along. But more confident than I was.
That's cool, though.
Thank Dang. You.
Yeah. What does, like, your every or your day-to-day kind of look like with that?
Yeah, it's all based around sessions. So I see clients typically for an hour. I see some couples, so those are typically 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. Kids sometimes are like 45 minutes because it's just way too long for their brains. But so I just go to the office. I have my little office with comfy chairs and plants and essential oils and nice. Lots of toys. And then I just normally do paperwork, but then I'm pretty much sessions back to back, notes in between or after, and then that's pretty much every day. It's just so I'm typically seeing like 5 to 7 clients a day.
Okay.
And that's Monday through Friday, so it's good. And calls I do, especially with foster. Like providing care to children in foster care, there's a lot of team work. Yeah. And so I'm talking to DCS, which is the Department of Child Safety, because they're the legal guardians, and I could talk more about what foster care is. But so I'm talking a lot to them because they're the ones who make all the legal decision making, to foster parents, like just supporting them as much as I can in kind of educating them about like why the foster children are behaving the way they do, or how to help.
Interesting.
Yeah. And yeah, and or even just like supporting them, just like providing a ear. And then eventually the birth parents, and hopefully working towards like the kids going back, so working with the birth parents. And then all other sorts of people's attorneys, CASAs are a big thing. If you guys know what that is, it's a court appointed special advocate, and it's a volunteer position that you could do. And they're kind of like, I guess like a mentor for the kid, like a buddy, but then in court, they'll say they can kind of like represent the child.
That's cool.
Yeah. So lots of phone calls and if there's any big like movements in the case, I'm calling everyone, or they're calling me. And then once a month we have a meeting for each kid where all the whole team gets together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot in one day.
Yeah.
What are your work hours?
It's really depends. So that's one thing that's nice, that it's flexible, because it's just kind of based on when I have sessions.
Yeah.
But since I'm mostly with kids, I'm mostly heavy in the afternoon and night, because we don't want them to miss school.
Right.
Like very, very rarely will they miss school, and I don't want them to miss school either. Sometimes they'll like get pulled out of school and brought. But yeah, it's a whole thing. And then there's transportation, getting them brought to us and arranging that. And so, so yeah, sometimes, a lot of the times I'll work till like 7, okay. seeing the kids after school.
Is there any like similarities between, or like what do you see similarities and differences between like adults and kid, or like foster kids, that you see like problems wise, I guess? Mm-hmm. Or yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I think,
or how do you deal with that differently,
I guess like the, well, the big, like, common, like, the biggest thing that we see for, I think, anyone in therapy is trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that looks a lot different for kids and adults. But even with adults, like, you're processing, like, childhood trauma, or, like, trauma that's happened since in their life. But then, so it's probably like in order, trauma, anxiety, depression, and then substance use. Obviously, that doesn't apply for kids, but it still very much like applies to their situation.
Yeah. Right. Interesting.
Are the adults that you see in any way connected to like the foster kids that you provide therapy to, or are they completely separate?
They're completely separate.
It's not like adults of like the foster parents or the biological parents. It's just
separate. Yeah, yes and no, because like I would never have a client that's like, I'm providing therapy to a foster mom, like for her own personal therapy, and then providing therapy to the kid, like it would just be too much conflict of interest. But and I'm learning more a lot about this, which I love, but doing family therapy, so I'm seeing the child who's involved in care, and then seeing the parent, because like the model that I work from is like no kid like exists in a bubble, and so like in order to heal them and like work forward, like they have to like their relationship with their parent, and their parent is like how they're gonna thrive. And so then it's weird because it's like I'm not necessarily providing the therapy like to the mom, like you are my client, like the kid is always my client, but like your stuff matters here too. And so like finding that balance, I guess, with like let's talk about you, but the focus is the kid too. But a lot of the times I'll meet with parents like just one-on-one before we all get together with the kid, just for them to trust me, and then for us to talk more candidly, like what do you think about DCS being involved? Like, what's your perception of the situation? Like, what are your hopes for your kid? How do we get there? Things like that.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that before.
Yeah, I did it in grad school either. And I've even, like, started doing infant mental health. So that's, like, 0 to 5. And
how do you do that? Yeah. What does that look like?
So with the kids those age, especially like 3 and under, but even higher, I'm never like just with the kid because I can't really provide therapy to like a baby. The most therapeutic thing I could do is like hold them and cuddle them. But then it's with the parent and the kid, and I'm learning a lot about it. So, and I'm really not like super trained in it, but I'm getting trained in it. And just like kind of reflecting like the both of their interactions. So like if a mom had like been on drugs a lot and like couldn't really read her baby, like if the baby's like arching their back and crying, like I know that the baby like probably doesn't want to be held, you know, but the mom who like hasn't learned those things, like wow, your baby probably wants to be put down, like she's really upset, maybe you should like set her down and like check if she needs to be changed or something like that. Interesting. So it's kind of like this education, like helping handy thing with the babies.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You definitely have to know a lot about the different age groups, the adults, the kids, the babies. Yeah.
All the different like development stuff. Yeah. So that's good because I can like refer back to like stuff that I learned more in psych, like, and I had a family development minor or human development minor, and so that's helpful. But yeah, and that's one thing in this field too, like continuing education, and like we're always having to be trained, and there's always more research, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to do it, is just like always wanting to be learning. And so and you could do so many things, just like plug social work with like social work and different types of things, whether it's therapy or whatever. So yeah, I've had to learn a lot.
That's really cool. Yeah. What's like one of the biggest misconceptions of your job?
I guess with like more like with being a therapist, I think people, like, especially when I say what I do, I'm, like, tempted to not say therapist, because people are like, oh,
What do you say?
Most of the time I just say social worker.
Okay.
Because people can, like, understand that more, I think.
Right.
Like, I feel like when I say therapist, people think, oh, I'm psychoanalyzing them or judging them. But, so I think a misconception about therapy is that it's, like, this big scary thing with, like, diagnosis and, like, ink blots and, like, all this stuff. But, like, in the room, it's so much just more about, and, like, the way I was trained and, like, believed, it's so much more about, like, just letting someone feel heard and empathy. And there's this theory, unconditional positive regard, and just that. So all of my clients, I just have, like, unconditional positivity and, like, hope for them and holding hope for them when they feel hopeless. And so I think it's a lot less of, that's a misconception that, like, therapy is, like, this big scary thing. Mm-hmm. But really it's just, like, someone to listen to you.
Yeah, that's so. Really cool. I went to therapy over last summer, and it was so scary my first time. But then I got there, and I was like, oh, this is great. Like, I'm just literally, I get to, like, one of my things was, like, I just didn't feel heard, or I, like, couldn't find someone I needed that would, like, understand. So that's really cool. Like, that's cool to hear from your side, too.
Yeah. And yeah. I've been to therapy, too. Also, like, when I was in my program, they, like, encouraged us to go to therapy to know what it's like to be on the other side. But... yeah, it's just, even if you can't explain, like, why it's awesome, you just, like, I always left feeling lighter. And I think that's a misconception, too, about therapy is, like, well, what am I going to talk about? Like, what if it's awkward? Like, blah, blah, blah. And each therapist is different, but, like, a lot of therapists, too, are trained, like, in, like, there's power in silence, too. And so, like, even if there's, like, an awkward moment, like... the client has, like, you can just, like, take it wherever you want to go. And, like, if you're like, I don't want to talk about this anymore, you can just be like, can we talk about something else? Like,
yeah,
I think that's a misconception. Like, you can guide your therapy however you want, or not like your therapist and, like, want someone else. But so, yeah.
Cool. Can you tell us a little more about foster care, what that is about? And yeah, any thoughts you have on that?
Yeah, I could just kind of, because that's one thing that it's so easy to throw out, like, oh, foster kids, but not necessarily people understand, and I didn't understand at all, even after going to school, kind of, like, what that meant, like, the process. But I think it's cool to know the process. So a call is usually made by whoever, and at least in Arizona, it's called DCS, and so Department of Child Safety will decide if they're going to investigate or not, and sometimes they don't. It's kind of up to their discretion, and then they investigate, and then they'll typically interview the child, and then if they decide that the child is unsafe for any reason, physical, emotional, most common is neglect, or in my experience, it's very common to witnessing of domestic violence, and then neglect is typically tied to substance use. And then so then the kid is removed, and so then they'll either go to a kinship placement. That's, like, the first thing that they try to do, so someone in the family. And then if that's not going to happen, then they'll try to do a foster care home, and so a licensed foster parent. And then, or they'll do a group home. And I'm also not an expert on this. This is just, like, through my experience. Totally. And so then a team will get together and make a plan, like, how, with the birth parents, like, what you need to do to get your child back.
Cool.
Is
that always an option, or is there sometimes people are just like, sorry?
I would say it's probably always an option, because most departments, reunification, which is going home, is, like, the first step. And of course, sometimes, like, that'll go off the table pretty quickly, like, if it was a really, really unsafe situation, which, in my experience, like, like a criminal type, like really intense mm-hmm. thing aren't as common. Of course, like they do happen, but reunification's like always on the table first.
Okay.
And so then they make a case plan, and then it's pretty much like a list of everything the parents have to do. Therapy's always on there. Different classes for like domestic violence or substance use. Yep. And so then they'll start to work their case plan, and then the parents, and then visits will happen. So kids will have visits with their parents, typically like 4 hours a week. And they typically, you always have to start supervised, so there always has to be someone there. And then if you, it's all like you're kind of like checking off points, and then if you kind of like pass the supervision stage, then you can be unsupervised. Then if you pass that, you can go to overnights. And then if you get there, it's, they're normally feeling pretty good that they're safe to go home. And then hopefully they can go home and they're not removed again. And but if it kind of gets to like the parents haven't been working the case plan, you know, it's just not moving that right way, and they don't, then they'll kind of take this other route and they'll move towards severance and adoption, which means the parents' rights will be severed, and then they'll go towards hopefully being adopted. And then, yeah. So that's kind of like what it all means. And so if there is, but that's one thing that I like to think about, like, it's more than just like a foster kid. Like there's a story there. Like the child wasn't safe in their home, weren't getting their needs met, like they're abused or neglected. Yeah. Like it's so much more of this story than just this like foster kid.
Yeah.
If the child is removed a second time, is reunification like the first step again, or is it like the rights are severed after that?
No, I think if, yeah, from my experience, if children are removed a second time or a third time, reunification still goes on the table, but I think everyone's aware on the team. I think it's good that reunification go on the table again, because especially with substance use, which is a lot of the reason that kids get removed, like their parents are using, like it's very rare that someone will quit the first time.
Right.
Like it takes a lot, and also it's so much, it's easy to say like, oh, the parent needs to quit, but there's so much more like wrapped into that with like poverty, mm-hmm. Like being financially stable, like in order to really like thrive sober, it takes like a lot of support from people. You have to cut people out of your life. So it's so much more than just like, you gotta quit. And so hopefully kids don't get removed again, but sometimes they do. And I think eventually, I think a judge would see, like, okay, or the team would see, okay, you've been removed 4 or 5 times. We need to take a different route.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people, as you guys can see, like, involved in the system, and everyone needs to be, like, on the same page. That's why we have, like, a lot of team meetings and get subpoenaed, which I haven't gotten subpoenaed yet, but I'm sure I will. And, so everyone kind of gets the full picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. But one thing that I've been really grateful for in this job is the, like, getting to advocate. Like, I get to do my role with the kid, mm-hmm. Which is amazing. But then I also get to, like, if I have an opinion and a therapeutic recommendation, I can give that to the team, like, based on what I've seen, like, this is my, and they value that, so that's cool to be, like, no, this is, you know, I can kind of, like, say what I think is, like, the best interest of the child, if I felt so, and at least a lot of the people that I've recommended really, or not recommended, that I've interacted with on the teams, like, value that opinion, so that's, like, really cool and weird because I'm like, oh wow, like I have some power. Like they care what I think. So I've had to like step into that, you know?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
But it is cool to, for them to kind of give a voice for the kids.
Definitely. Dang. Go you.
Let's see. I have a question from like a little while ago, but you said a really common like thing is therapy for a child who's viewed domestic violence. Is mm-hmm. that what you said?
Yeah.
How do you go about like talking to a child about mm-hmm. that? Like,
yeah. And that's not, I'm, when I got into this, I didn't necessarily, wouldn't have necessarily thought of that. But it's totally true that it's so traumatic for kids to see mm-hmm. Domestic violence, whether it just be like verbal or emotional, but also mm-hmm. physical. And so a lot of my job, like I start with some basic things, but is like explaining things to kids in an age-appropriate way. Mm-hmm. Thank God there's like a lot of books, which are really cool. Like, When Daddy Gets Mad at Mommy, mm-hmm. and that kind of explain it, but kind of the way that I explain it is, because a lot of these kids have a lot of anger, and so I'm, like, teaching them that, like, it's okay to be mad, but we can't use our bodies, we, mm-hmm. like, need to try to stay calm, like, the coping skills is, like, the big thing, and so, at least what I do is kind of framing it in, like, Daddy's like gets mad too, but he has trouble controlling his body, and so he's learning right now how to control his body and how to, what's going to be his coping skills, so kind of like trying to put it in their frame mm-hmm. of reference,
right?
But yeah,
dang, wow. That's so traumatic.
Yeah,
I can't even imagine. So can you kind of go into like what therapy looks like for like in an average session, and also like why should people go to therapy, like why should the average person
go just, to therapy?
yeah
Well, in an average session with kids, just because that's mostly what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
I'm really grateful because I've learned a lot from like the people that I work around, but like the first thing that I really try to do with kids is like be able to identify their emotions. That's a big thing. Like just getting to know them, that's the biggest thing at first, is just like creating the rapport and like that they can trust me, and that's my favorite part, is because eventually like I see kids for 6-9 months a year, and like every other week, and so we have this whole little relationship, you know, like I know them and I know what they like and who they are. And that's the same with adults. Like, that's my favorite part, is like my relationship with them, and they're all different. And but yeah, so teaching them about their emotions is the big first thing, and then talking about coping skills is the next big thing. And so like what to do when you get mad, because a lot of the times the kids have like seen all this traumatic stuff, and they in their little minds and bodies are just like, you see the behavior, right? And right. So their behaviors are like, either they'll be like really like throwing chairs at school, or like being really defiant, or like lying and stealing. And so that's the thing that I really like with being able to be that role on the team, when if it's like, well, he's doing like all these bad behaviors, being able to be like, okay, but this is why he's doing this bad behavior, because he/she has been through all this stuff and they don't know how to express it, and they like don't know how to process it. And so so then that's the next thing, is like getting them to kind of process through their story, which then typically will have them like decrease their behaviors theoretically. And so processing with little kids or just different kids, it's like through play. And so they'll do like, we'll play with the dollhouse, and then suddenly mommy and daddy figures are doing things that are kind of like playing out their story. or through art, and like we're drawing pictures, and then like the stories kind of start to come out on the page. Or we'd talk about their story. Like there's a lot of kids that once the rapport is there, they'll just kind of start like spewing like, oh, well, this one time this happened.
Yeah.
And so kind of processing through and working through their story. And then I can kind of jump in and be like, this is why those things happened. Like, oh yeah, like when mommy was acting weird, like that, this is because she was putting bad things in her body. That they make whatever the little child story that I tell to help like explain it to them. And yeah, and so then hopefully then kind of like working towards close, because that's the what we always say is like hoping to work yourself out of a job or hoping to close them. Mm-hmm. So when they're able to kind of understand their story, process their story, and they're able to like use their coping skills, so when they get mad, they take deep breaths or ask for an adult or whatever. It's a big thing for me too to like teach them what safety is. And like what, so if and when they go home, they can tell what's safe and what's not safe and what to do when that happens.
That's really cool, yeah.
And so yeah, that's a lot of like what I do. And I mean, I think it is really important to note that this is just like one piece, and like a lot of these kids will have to go through therapy again probably in their mm-hmm. life, especially as we always say, as they meet developmental milestones. So when they start like getting into adolescence, it might feel like a big wave, and they may remember more things, and they mm-hmm. so they may need to go again, and as an adult. So this is just like a start, which is sometimes like sad for me to think about. You know, it'd be nice to just be like, okay, and it's done and you're good.
Yeah.
And, like, and now like go on, and hopefully they will, but you know, like there's a lot there. And also just like having to leave, we talk about that too, that it's traumatic to have to not live in your house and not live with your parent. And that's one thing I wanted to say too, that like one of the common things I saw, which has been really good for me to see but surprising, was that pretty much every kid, like all they want is to be back with their parent. That's all they want. Like, I just miss my mom. And I think it's easy to be like an adult and be like, especially if it's like an abuse case, like, well, why, you know?
Definitely.
Like, we don't like dad or we don't like mom.
Yeah.
But it's not that black and white, especially for them. Like, yes, bad things will have happened, but it's still their mom and it's still their dad, and they mm-hmm. still love them. And so that's really good for me, because I don't know, I really like to believe that things are not black and white, and so you can like both love someone and hate them, or like have really hard feelings for them at the same time. And so
interesting. And then why do you think it's important for all of us to go to therapy?
So many things.
Yeah.
Because it just is. I think, because I think we all have stuff to process through and work through, and process and work through are so vague, but just to like, whether it's from our childhood or like other relationships. But I think to kind of the thing in school is like make meaning out of. And so like we've all been through stuff, and I think it's important to like get to a place where you've like made meaning out of it, and like how is it gonna like how does it make you who you are, how are you gonna use it going forward, like what have been the good things that have come out of bad situations, which is a hard place to get to. So I think it's really important for people to do that, because I think I think if you don't, like those things pop up, like keep popping up. And and then especially if you have something more like a mental health diagnosis that has come out of that, whether it's anxiety or depression, I think like everyone's now therapy is becoming a lot more of a cool thing, which is great. But like, I think we all deal with some sort of form of that. I deal with both of those. And so, like, you don't have to deal with it all on yourself, all by yourself, or just like be trying to make it day to day. Like, you can actually like survive and like live. And so I think therapy can be a good way of like, how do you handle those things and cope with those things, and it becomes less about like surviving and you have like more of control over your life.
That's interesting. So, yeah, cool. I mean, I don't know anything, but I didn't think I had anything to talk about when I went to therapy, but I went just because a lot of my family was going at the time, and they were like, maybe it'd be good for you to go. And then I got there and I was like, oh my gosh, all these things are so abnormal that happened in my life. Like, I just wanted to talk through them. And it was like, I also realized that I didn't really know how to process my emotions or like talk about them. Like, I just stuffed things down because I just didn't have the like tools to like talk about them. And that was like a big thing in my family, that we just didn't talk about emotions. Yeah. It's changing now, but
yeah,
it took like a lot of therapy to like, for all of us to be like, okay, this is how I'm feeling, and this is how I talk about that. So, yeah. I think that's really cool. I love therapy, so.
it's really cool. Good. Yeah. But it takes a lot of, like, vulnerability, and it's, like, way scary.
It's so scary.
Yeah. Like, even the first time I went, just, like, so scary, and this complete stranger, and, like, talking about things that you've never said out loud before, or, like, maybe these things that you think that's like a pattern that plays in your head, like a thought, like I'm not good enough or whatever, but like saying that out loud and like the therapist being able to be like, like, do you think that's actually true? Or like, where do you think you first thought that? Or whatever. I'm not going to do a therapy session.
But, no, that's really interesting.
But yeah, it takes so much. It's so scary. And we did this exercise in grad school. The teacher that I had, my like first teacher in grad school, was so much did that experiential learning, which was terrifying. But I'll tell two stories. Why not?
Okay, go for it.
The first story was, so I was in my like second day of class, and we're just like doing our thing. The classes were longer, so we'd have 3-hour classes, and she was like, okay guys, so there's some people in the community that are in need, and so the teachers have offered up their rooms, and so their offices, and so you're gonna go upstairs in pairs and go do a therapy session. Like, second day of grad school, like, this is the name of the client that you're gonna see, they're in this teacher's classroom. Go. And I was like terrified. I was, like, I can't do this. Like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do. And so, and we had an hour session, and then after we went back to the class, and they were all second year students, like acting.
Nice. Oh my gosh.
But I had no idea. Like, I was, and the whole time I was like, there's no way. Like, is this legal? Like, this can't be legal. And then eventually I was like, well, it doesn't matter if it's true or not. Like, I'm in this room. I just, like, have to do this.
Yeah.
And then they, like, provided us feedback. But I think that was a really good lesson, is it's so much more about, like, being a human and, like, listening than it is about, like, all the skills. And there's lots of... I'm just going to keep talking.
Yeah, keep talking. That's great.
There's, like... when I start to get, like, nervous about, like, well, do I know everything? And, like, I need to, like, know all the tools and all the answers to give this person. Like, there's this research study that, like, they compared, like, different types of, like, treatments. There's, like, CBT, like, different types of modalities. But it didn't matter what the people who had the best relationship with their therapist had the most growth. So it didn't matter what, like, what system you used or whatever. It was just who felt the most connection with their therapist.
Cool.
So when I, like, start to get nervous or whatever, I just, like, just relax in that and, like, try to be present with the person. And then the second story is that same teacher, she had us in that class. She like handed out paper and she was like, okay, I want you guys all to write your biggest secret on this piece of paper.
Huh.
And put it in this envelope. And of course we're all like staring at each other. Like,
yeah.
And then one of my classmates, I was like, well, what are you gonna do with these?
Yeah.
Like, what are we gonna do? And she was like, write your deepest secret and put it in the envelope. And we're all just sitting there. So eventually we all like did it. I think I chose like a mediocre secret because
I like, didn't know. I would do the same.
Yeah. Like, okay. And then we like sealed it up. And then she was like, that's how your clients feel. Like that vulnerability that you felt and that fear and like nervousness. Like, what are you going to do with this? Like, that's what they all feel. And so you need to like give value to that and like honor like that. It's, you're in a really pivotal person, so that was really cool. And then we got to rip it up.
Good.
And then me and my like grad school bestie were like, what did you write? Like, let's talk about this.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Did you share?
Yeah, I think we shared.
Because they were both like mediocre.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, I knew that's what you're gonna write. So and that was the thing too in grad school, especially going through oh, that's what I was going to say. Another reason why they encourage us to go is because we're learning about all of these things and can, like, bring up your own stuff, you know? And so, like, going to your therapy while you're in school. And that definitely happened, like, learning about stuff. And you're like, that could be me.
Yeah.
You're like, I should probably go talk to someone. And so, but yeah, so going through that with all of that, I mean, most of the girls in my program were girls, and so like we all got super bonded, so that was cool.
That was cool. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
That was good. I don't have any other questions. Yeah, is there any like anything you want to leave us with or that we didn't go over?
No, I think the big like things that is like that therapy's cool, which we've like gone over.
Yeah.
And that a thing that I really believe is, because I think it's easy to be like, well, how do I get involved? And like, how do I do? How do I make a change? And I don't know. I really think that everyone has like a place. And so like some people, they may not be built for like being a therapist, but they could like decide that they're for an issue and like call their senators or like donate money or whatever. And then I also believe that there's like trickle down, so even if like foster kids aren't your like push, like I'm also really into like the opioid crisis and substance use and like really care about that. And so like if that's your thing or domestic violence is your thing, like they're all connected to, and at least what I've seen of like the clients, like this mom that's in a domestic violence relationship like may have a kid, which is, you know, and like safe needles is like a thing, so like making safe needle kits for like, I don't know, so it's all connected and it all trickles down, I think. And so just like plugging into anything I think has an effect.
Cool. That's a really good answer. Yeah. Really good like thing that you said. Anyway, thank you so much for coming on our podcast.
So
that was fun. That was so interesting. Yeah. And we've been like really excited to have you on.
Oh, cool.
We've been talking about it a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Now I want to go to therapy. Yeah. I've never been. So I could probably talk about some stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you so much.
No problem.
So, we're going to do our like normal outro real quick.
Okay.
And then,
So go follow us on Instagram if you haven't yet. It's at podcast.qlc. And that's also our Gmail, so podcast.qlc@gmail.com. And then we also have a Facebook page, which is Quarter Life Crisis. So go to all those places and send us any questions, comments, or if you want to be on our podcast.
Let us know. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next Monday. Bye.